Hi, I'm Frank Fascino Jr., and you're listening to Out There with TJ.
Out there.
Well, these two fellas have a lot to say. Frank, I've known Frank Fascino now for, I don't even know how long it's been, Frank. How many years has it been?
Lots of years. Six, something like that, TJ. I've done a bunch of shows with you going back quite a few years.
And Phil DeLong, who I got to know through Frank. Frank, tell me that story again of, if you don't mind, Phil, how Phil helped you with your back. I find that is just an amazing story.
Yeah, I've had quite a few spinal surgeries and a fusion, and sometimes my back will act up. And I actually met Dr. Phil about 4 years ago. He had a little shop and storefront, and we just kind of just started talking to him one day, and he just looked at me, and he knew I was involved with alien research, and that kind of took me back. And we started talking on and on. Phil told me that he had done some healings and different things. And, you know, you're always skeptical because there's so many people that are psychics and they say this, that, and the other. And I started talking to Phil a little bit more about the ET connection and what was going on in the world. And, you know, a lot of people say, there's not too many UFO sightings anymore. All you got to do is go on YouTube or just Google UFO sightings and put the dates in, and there's literally tens of thousands of sightings up there. But anyways, Phil started telling me one of his primary focuses is healing people. And I had my back go out on me about 3 years ago, where I was down for the 10 count. And I called Dr. Phil up, and he actually came over to my house, TJ.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And, and I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5", 240 pounds. And when I go down for the 10 count. And Dr. Phil came over to my home, and he did a healing on my back with energy. And I don't know how he does it. I've never really asked him, but all I know is it worked. What was really amazing is at the point, TJ, where my back had tightened up and spasmed out, it was interesting. I couldn't even sit down or lay down. So what I did is I stood in front of a chair, and Dr. Phil told me to close my eyes, and I leaned on the back of a chair. The seat was facing away from me, and I had my eyes closed, and I was leaning over on the top portion of the back of the chair. And the next thing I know, I'm swaying back and forth from left to right to left and right. And I thought I was going to tip over. And I turned around to see what Phil was doing, because it takes a lot to move me around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I doing? I felt like a pendulum going left, right. And I was actually swaying. And at that point, I says, well, I better open my eyes and turn around. So I turned around real slow, and I looked behind me, and Phil was actually moving his hands back and forth across my lower lumbar area. Later on, he told me he was moving energy around.
He wasn't touching you at all, though?
No. His hands were quite a bit away. But the point I'm getting at is to move me going back and forth. That kind of freaked me out at first. And I could feel heat going into the lower lumbar region of my back.
Wow.
And he's done that a few times. Occasionally, if I overdo it or I'm doing some yard work or I'm traveling a lot and my back will go out, it's a little bit cheaper than going to a chiropractor or to a doctor.
Yeah.
Because the money that's been spent on my back and in hospitals for several years, I'm not too keen on doctors. But this work with Dr. Phil, and he's done it a few other times too, TJ. And it works, and what's amazing, he never puts a finger on you.
So it's a real gentle way. And we'll let Phil...
Probably like 6 to 12 inches away.
And
you could feel the heat actually going into your body. One time I remember, this was another time, TJ, I actually looked at Phil, and he had sweat pouring off of him.
Really? Interesting.
I guess he was getting himself worked up. Is that part of the process, Phil? where you start sweating and turning red as you're doing?
It's just a reaction to the energies that are flowing through. And what it is life force or God force energies that's just being directed from the universe and through me as a conduit to Frank.
Now, you know, we hear of people that get healed from things, and you help Frank, and you've helped many other people. But truly, people can't heal unless they really allow themselves. You're not really healing them. They're kind of healing themselves, right?
That's correct. And they have to believe in it. They have to do their part.
So if people have any kind of issue, you can help them, but they also have to believe it and be open to it. And ultimately, it's not you healing them. It's you allowing them to understand that they can heal themselves, right?
That's correct.
Kind of like what Jesus was doing. Would you say that would be similar?
Yes, it would. He was the greatest healer ever known to mankind.
Next to Dr. Phil DeLong, right?
Okay, I'll take that.
Well, there's been some really great healers. John of God, you've heard of him, I'm sure, right?
I've
heard amazing things about him as well. So, and what people are doing, they're all basically drawing this energy in and transferring it to someone else. You know, I also thought there must have been more to these healings than, you know, if somebody has a major illness, people have to change within too, don't they? Because that's what brings it on. So if Jesus healed somebody that had a disease, would he have not had to tell them, okay, you got to stop thinking this way or acting this way? Would that have been part of it as well, Phil?
I believe it would have to be so. I'll give you a couple instances where I've healed a person or two people. One was a lady who was going to have her leg amputated due to gangrene. And it was just, she believed in it. She believed in crystals. And I gave her a piece of citrine for the gangrene. And she put her faith right into that crystal. And she went to the doctor and, okay, you have circulation now. We're not going to amputate. But we may have to amputate below your knee. And then after that, it was your ankle. After that, it was toes. And then it cleared up. But it all has to do with faith. And another person, I had worked on their heart. And this one had the faith as well. And she was going in for a stent type procedure, which could have been open heart surgery, they didn't know, and she had an oversized heart. So I had worked with her 2 days before she was going for that procedure, and when they looked at her when she got in, she had a normal heart.
Wow.
So it all has to be, and no procedure at all, everything was clear.
And so really we can almost change and alter anything, really, if we truly believe it, right?
That is correct. And we have to understand that our organs will, what do you call it, regenerate every 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So that's why an alcoholic who quits drinking should not have any problems within 7 or 10 years, and the smoker as well, that is what the FDA will tell you, is that within 7 years, you'll have normal lungs and heart.
As if, and also I think, you know, you look at people, if they hang on to, because a lot of what brings these things on, and maybe even in Frank's case, is the stress and the negativity that we hold on to, whether it's fear or anger. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that.
And so if we don't change that pattern, I can give you a good example. There's a woman I know who got cancer, and she took a real natural, amazing natural product, healed her completely. 5 years later, the cancer came roaring back, and she was unable to take this natural product, and because she couldn't swallow, and their family couldn't give it to her. But she was upset with her husband because he was getting a little dementia. And so her anger from what I can understand of it, is what drew this. The body is just out of balance, and it just is saying, okay, you have to find some balance here, or I'm going to give you this as a reminder.
Yes, I totally agree. It's any negativity that comes into your aura is going to affect your health.
So is that kind of, Frank, we don't want to pick on you, but is that kind of what happened to Frank? Was he the stress and taking on things with his back?
Yes, it was. It partially was with physical exercise or over-exercise, but the other one was just concerns.
Mm. And is that true? Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I really do. And actually, it was a couple times, just being stressed out. One time it was coming back off of a big book tour. I think it just all caught up with me. Going on the road, isn't all that's cracked up to be TJ and doing book signings and meeting people and, you know, people telling you their stories of their abductions. You know, I've heard it all, TJ. And when you take all of this in, it kind of wears on you. And the last time that happened is I had just come off a book tour.
Let me ask you this, because you just said this now. I want to ask Phil this, because you said you went on a tour, you met all these people, you took in some of the... Is it other people's energies, too, that are affecting, like in Frank's case, did that affect him?
That is absolutely correct, TJ. And it's, we have our own aura around us. And when we talk to people, we establish what is called chords. And there are positive chords, but in the most contexts, chords are negative attachments. So if we get to a person who may talk to us but really doesn't like us and thinks we're full of us, it's that we can take on, and that will affect our, you know, the negativity or affect our health.
That's when it has to be cleared out then, correct?
Yep, and so you can clear it out. We use the violet flame to do so. I believe the violet flame is a transmuting type of energy where it transmutes negative energies into positive outcomes. So as individuals, we all have to be positive, mm-hmm. and have to clear our thoughts of anything negative. And we can be our own worst enemies, healthy, with our own thoughts.
Well, when Frank started talking about that, he went on that tour, and I can only imagine, Frank, that you met a lot of people that had been made fun of or laughed at, and here's one guy willing to listen to him. So there's a bit of negative energy probably on some of these people to begin with, and you might have absorbed some of that.
When I, back in 2004, TJ, before I went to West Virginia and my first book was released, I remember Stanton Friedman calling me up at home, and he said, Frank, one thing you're going to encounter is a lot of people, you're going to hear a lot of stories. And he said something I'll never forget, and he said, and then you're going to have the people who don't come forward into the mainstream at the book signings. They'll kind of stand over on the side, at the bookstore, whatever location, a few feet away, and they will stay there for hours and putz around and wait for everybody else to leave, and then they'll walk over to you when you're by yourself and they'll tell you something that'll just knock your socks off. And he told me that in 2004, I believe it was September. And if he wasn't right, and that's happened to me hundreds of times, TJ, hundreds of times.
Has it had a negative effect on you?
Some of the stories are a little bit off the wall, but I'm not one to judge, because one thing I noticed, TJ, traveling around the country, there's a lot of similarities between abduction cases and between people, little intricate details. I'm not into that end of the UFO research, but I've heard a lot of different stories, and there's a lot of connecting pieces there that I've never talked about. And one thing I did notice in West Virginia, over all the years I'd been touring up there, I had talked to kids that were 10 years old, and I remember I talked to a fella, he was close to 90 years old, and he had a couple UFO sightings in the Charleston area back in the late 30s and early 1940s, and he described the craft to me, which I had never heard of anything like that whatsoever. I read it, and then I had a kid who was a young teenager a couple years later told me that he saw a craft that looked like this, and it was the same one that this old man had told me about. And this was back in, like, he saw it about a year before in 2003, the same sighting this guy had, like, you know, 65, 70 years before. And I don't think they would have known each other. And, you know, but what I'm getting at is there's a lot of stuff going on out there, and I was kind of like a magnet to talk to all of these people. And what's interesting about talking with these people is being able to sit there, watch their body movements, their maneuvers, and look in their eyes. Usually within the first couple minutes, you can tell pretty quick, TJ, if they're BSing you or not. There may be some good psychopaths out there that you can't tell the difference,
right,
I'm sure.
Right.
But it was just interesting hearing a lot of the same different stories, little minute details, you know, not a general, big generalized portion of the talk they had with me, but it's the little details that stick out.
You know, now that you mention this, Frank, and since, you know, there was that incident in Point Pleasant, West Virginia in 1966, you know what I'm talking about?
Right, the Mothman.
And you saw, remember you told me, you saw something, somebody told you in West Virginia they saw something similar to that?
Yes. They're still going on.
And I guess since we got Phil here, well, let's ask, if you don't mind, Phil, what is that?
The Mothman?
Yeah, those kind of things.
They are energy fields that I associate with the elementals, so I believe they belong to the elemental realm. Even though elementals are what we consider small, it's part of, I guess, to prove to humans that, you know, there are other life forms.
Would you say that these, again, are these benevolent or malevolent, or can you have both, or how do you feel about these different forms?
I believe they can be both. The one in West Virginia, I believe, is benevolent.
Okay.
It's kind of like, you know, Batman has his dark and his light side.
Okay. So, Frank, the story goes that this guy told you what happened. This was at one of your events, wasn't it?
There has been a couple different people I spoke to about the Mothman or Birdman. First of all, I did a lecture a few years ago up at Point Pleasant, and I met a lot of people there as well. I spoke on the Ohio River on a big stage in an area of the town and back in the museum. And from what I understand, I never got into it a lot, TJ, because that's a whole different can of worms to open up. There were two types of creatures that were seen. One looked like a gigantic bird, and one looked like a moth. One almost looked like Big Bird from Sesame Street, that particular character, where it looked like a bird, something like a pterodactyl, and the Mothman is the thing that had the red eyes. Isn't that right, Phil? So
yeah.
There's basically, you're talking about two different entities here. But the one story that really stands out to me, and this was over 20 years ago, I was actually in a restaurant just outside of Braxton County, and I was with a friend of mine, and we were talking to the owner of this restaurant, and he called over this guy, and this was kind of funny, TJ. He called over this fella who was sitting on the other side of the bar. He says, "Hey, Tiny, you come over here." And this guy, Tiny, walks over, and he made me look like a baby, TJ. This guy was huge. He probably had to be about 6'8", and he probably weighed about 450 pounds.
Wow.
And this guy had on the coverall jeans with the hiking boots. You know, he was typical West Virginian good old boy. And this, he had a big beard, and the owner of the establishment said, this guy Frank is doing some research on the Flatwoods Monster up there in Braxton County. I know there's a lot of other stories circulating around of this other thing that was seen, this Birdman or Mothman. And this guy, whose name was Tiny, he told me this took place back in, it was about 1972 or 73. He was hunting in Wheeling, West Virginia. And he was out with a group, and they had went in different directions. And he told me he was standing in a clearing of a bunch of trees. That was middle afternoon, and he had his big hunting rifle. And he said he heard this fluttering noise, and from the top of the trees, this thing dropped down, basically like it was on a line, okay, like a stuntman invisible wire. He said this thing dropped straight down out of the top of the forest into this clearing, and it was about, he said, it was something like 20 yards away from him. It dropped right down in front of him. And he said it had these big, gigantic wings that looked like a man. This looks more like the Mothman than the Birdman. And he said he was so paralyzed with fear, this guy Tiny, who was looked like King Kong, he was so scared he couldn't even lift his rifle up and point it at it. And he said, and the thing looked down at him. He said it was a little bit bigger than him, but it was had these big giant wings. And he said the wings were not flapping. And when it landed down in front of him, it looked down on at him, and he said he almost just crapped his pants. He was totally in fear. And seeing a guy this big, and now I was looking up to him, TJ, how big this guy was. He was actually blushing, as he told me. He was scared. And I asked him, what happened to this thing? He said it flapped its wings a couple times, and it took straight off and went straight up again and then flew away. And he says it took him a little while to get his composure together.
Wow.
And kind of held his head down and just shook his head and kept saying, it really happened to me, boy, it really happened to me. And that was the end of his story. But he was quite scared. What I remember, TJ, is he was blushing and embarrassed to tell me he was so scared and paralyzed at what he saw, he couldn't even pick his rifle up. And they were deer hunting.
And Phil you would say,
embarrassed.
And Phil would say, this is basically the same type of energy that was in Point Pleasant. And don't they also make themselves known to certain people?
Yes, they do. And then part of this could be with the, I guess, cross with the DNA stuff that the Atlanteans did way back in the times where they, you know, crossed humans with certain animals.
So you're saying that this could actually be a being, but you felt it was like from the elemental kingdom, and it's kind of like coming in and out of a doorway.
Yes, I do.
Okay. And that would make a sense to me because there are so many, you know, over the years, you know, we have a lot of Sasquatch stuff up here. I'm sure you guys have run into that down in that area as well. People talking about those things. And I know people personally that have seen that. There's another thing that shows up around from time to time around here, and it's called the man wolf or the dog man, dog boy. But it's a wolf-like creature that gets up on two legs and runs away. But it scares the hell out of you first before it does that. And I'm, you know, people have told me that that's another one of those things that kind of come from a doorway. And they show up here and then they're gone. You don't see them.
It wasn't during a full moon, was it?
I don't think it was. You think people do actually turn hairy and turn into a wolf?
No, I do not.
Okay. Do you think that those beings that I'm talking about, the man wolf, I don't know if you ever heard about that, but does that come from another place as well, like a doorway?
It does. yes.
Okay. What about Sasquatch, since we're on this subject, and then we'll get to Frank's ghost stories. But what about Sasquatch? Is that a being that lives here, or does that come through a doorway as well?
I believe it is a being that lives here, because we have the Yeti in the Himalayas. We have Sasquatch around the U.S. I believe they're just the same type of tribe or the same type of genetics.
They seem to have the ability to, like, disappear. People have told me that they've seen them, like, walk right into a river and be gone, or walk into a tree. So they must have knowledge. And a lot of people said they've been seen near UFOs, too. There's a lot of research that's, and so there's something going on with that as well. Your thoughts on that, either one of you?
Some of that has to do with the Lemurian times.
Okay.
And Lemuria stretched out to, I guess, California and Mount Shasta is where they put some of Lemuria. So when we, in those times, that humans as well as other forms could either take the spirit form or take the human form, and it was one of those transitions that you could make. And due to the fall of mankind or the fallen angels, it has, some people are still in that dimension, like Sasquatch, and I agree with that, or we're in the human forms where we have lost that capability.
Mm. Good answer. Thank you very much. Now, Frank, let's hear the story about, because you want to tell this, right, about your dad? Do you want to hear
that? Touch on that a little bit.
So when did your dad, and sorry to hear about it, Frank, I'm sure it was tough on you, but when did your dad pass away?
About two years ago, he passed away.
And you've been real close with your parents. You live with your parents. You take care of your parents.
I helped care of my dad. He had cancer. Then he fell and he broke his leg, and he just took a turn for the worse during that whole period. It's like everything hit one after another. But shortly after he passed away, stuff started going around the house here. And our telephone number, which is unpublished, our phone kept dialing itself, and the automated voice kept saying, Frank Fascino, with the telephone number, it would recite it, calling. So our telephone was calling itself and saying my father's name, and this has happened about 5 or 6 times. It happened more right after he passed away, TJ.
Right.
And it kind of spooked Mom out, and it kind of spooked me a little bit. And Dr. Phil was actually giving a public lecture and doing readings and messages. And he started talking to me about this. Now, at that particular lecture, there was about 60 people there. And he told me that you're going to be getting another phone call soon. And there was a girl sitting in front of me, and I remember she turned around and looked at me dead in the eyes. She wanted to see who I was, because Phil was talking out amongst the crowd. And as this girl looked at me, she locked eyes, she turned around, and when Dr. Phil got done with his lecture and his readings, everybody walked to the back of the room, and this girl came over to me. And she says, oh, thank goodness, this is the only, this isn't the only person this has happened to. And this woman looked at me. She was about my age, TJ. And I said, is this about the phone calls? And she said, yes, the same thing happened with my dad, and it kind of scared the hell out of my mom. We were getting calls from our own telephone number and then hang-ups. And she said, the one thing that's kind of crazy about it, she says, my father was an old Italian, old school Italian, and he hated the telephone. And I started laughing because my father was the same way, TJ. He was own business. He was a business owner.
Right,
and I'm
right.
24 hours a day, and every time you seem to sit down for dinner or to go relax and do something, the telephone would ring, and the operator would say it was a breakdown or there was a problem. And my father hated the phone, too. And I'm getting to that point myself with solicitors. You know, I feel like my father now. Every time the phone rings, you know, I kind of cringes. Like, who's bothering me now with these solicitors?
You know what, Frank? I must have talked about this on the radio because there's a guy I know up here, and he sent me through Facebook. He said, TJ, you were talking about that phone thing. I don't know. I must have mentioned it to my coworker on the air after you and I talked. And this guy sent me a Facebook message. He said, the same thing happened to me because his wife passed away in the last year or so. And his phone would ring at home, and it was his number, and it freaked him out. So we're going to turn...
Right, correct?
Yeah. What we call this, TJ, is just spirit communication. And it's just a attempt by spirit to make the presence known. And basically, if you're going to call your own phone number, you're going to get a busy signal. You're not going to get that caller ID of who's calling.
Right. But spirit has a way to... there's nothing's impossible with spirit, truly, when it learns how to... it can communicate with us in so many different ways, can it?
Yes, it can.
So what we think is, well, that's impossible. You can't do that. Well, I don't think the rules apply because this world is an illusion to begin with. So they must learn how to master things, or they just understand how things work?
Yes. Basically, all it is energy. So they know that they are energy and can more or less go on that frequency and make that happen.
Like in my own case, I think you and I have talked about this, and I told you about this, Frank, where my father showed up in a very vivid dreamlike state, and he talked to me, and it was just this wave of love that came from him. And at the end of it, he said, because I asked him, I want to see you again, what do I do? And he said, just think of me and I'll be there. And then at that very moment, my alarm kicked on the radio, and the song was I'll Be There by the Escape Club, and the lyrics are exactly what that he said. Just, I may have died, I've gone nowhere, just think of me and I'll be there. And that, you know, I did some research on it and I said, well, there's no way that song in 1996, it had come out in 91, and as a radio station, now that I'm in radio, I know these things, there's no way that that song would repeat again. Like, it would take several days for it to line up exactly at that time. I guess what I'm saying to you, Phil, and asking, they can do all that, can't they?
Yes, they can.
And so Frank should not be afraid of what happened.
That's correct. And spirit works in a myriad of ways, and nothing is, you know, too big for them to manifest.
Let me ask you this, Phil. Do you ever get freaked out when something happens? Because you probably experience a lot of different things, but at first when it happens, does anything ever freak you out?
Not particularly. Because I have that connection with spirit, and it's interesting. Most of the greater experiences are out in nature.
Okay.
And just experiencing it. If you see a spinning leaf in a tree, that is spirit communication.
Really?
Yep. So just take a moment and kind of connect to whatever spirit is there.
What other signs are there? Maybe there's some that... Frank, you said somebody rang the doorbell and nobody was there. Was that his father as well?
Yes, it was.
And banging on the door, too, a couple other times and waking you up in the middle of the night. And as I told you, TJ, we have a gated area here with signs of no trespassing and attack dogs and gun signs, you know, sheriff's department signs hanging up. So to get to my front yard, you know, you got to be a little nervy to trespass onto the property. And then there's a second fenced off area. And then the house, and in the middle of the night, somebody's banging on the door. And I know what the alarm system should have triggered and went off. And, you know, another time it was doorbells ringing. So I get on the blower, and I call Dr. Phil up. And I'm like, Dr. Phil, what's going on here? I know nobody came up at a house. We would have been tipped off. And, you know, what was funny, TJ, is the guard dog didn't even wake up during this time. And this dog can hear a fly farting on the other end of the house. But, you know, it has radar ears and it goes ballistic. You should have seen it when it knows Dr. Phil, and it goes crazy when he walked in the door. But the dog didn't wake up when the doorbell rang one time, and then the other time was the banging on the door in the middle of the night. But it happened, the most recent time it happened is the doorbell rang in the middle of the day. The dog went ballistic then, but the other couple times it was kind of weird. The dog stayed asleep. I don't know why. Is there a reason for that, Dr. Phil? Does the spirit do something to the dog?
It's just a frequency.
It's a frequency?
Yes.
But animals can pick up this better than we can, unless we get attuned to it, right?
That is absolutely correct.
So they oftentimes will be like an early warning system for us when there's a spirit and energy present. Cats and dogs, is it true what they say? Dogs kind of run away from it and cats kind of run towards it?
I wouldn't really say that.
Okay, so because I've had people say like the feline energy kind of is more of a protective one, and sometimes I'm sure dogs will try to protect you, but how many dogs have you seen go yelping when they see something, you know, that's not there? They'll take off running.
Yeah. Well, I had a couple of seances in my house. And I have one dog that they know that spirit is there, and they go to a particular place in the house and just look at the wall and try to climb the wall and then lay down.
Hmm. So really, the animal could have a reaction like we, whether it's a cat or dog, they could be afraid as well if they're not 100%, but they can recognize and actually see it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Animals will always tell us that. They'll point us. What other signs should we look for? What if we have, like, I think I told you the bald eagle story. The bald eagle, I get home, and this bald eagle, this was like early in the afternoon. I had to go home and change because I had to do a live broadcast in town. I got done with my regular shift, and I wasn't wearing station apparel, so I wanted to go home and put on at least a shirt. And I get to this is in 2007 or 8. I get to the railroad tracks just before my house, and there's a bald eagle 20 feet down, sitting on the railroad tracks, staring at my house. And I roll down my window thinking he's going to fly away. And I go, hey, buddy. Hey, buddy. And I'm really friendly with the animals. I think I have a great connection with him. And he doesn't even move. He doesn't even budge. And my mom used to always have this way of getting animals' attention, and she made a noise like this. And they would look at her, a wild animal. They would all just drop what they're doing and look at her. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to try that. I'm going to go. And this bald eagle, he turns his head and he looks at me like, and he has this, I can't really tell if it's an emotion, but it's like, you're pissing me off, okay? It's kind of, that's what it looked like. And then he turned his head back towards my house and he kept staring. And then I went to my house, and I changed, and I came back because I had to get back into town. And I get to the tracks now on the opposite side, and I see these guys pulling up. They have a truck that's fitted to be on the tracks. And they get out, and they're coming from the opposite way. And I'm thinking, first of all, how did they even know this eagle was there? And they have this burlap bag, and one of the guys says to me, yeah, we think he's hurt. We're going to take him to a raptor guy that can help him. And I'm thinking, you're not going to be able to grab that eagle with that one little burlap bag. And once they got within about 10 to 15 feet of this bird, one was walking in the ditch, one was walking right on the tracks, the bird just flew off to a tree. I think it's just the coolest thing one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. But that would that be a loved one communicating with me? What do you think, Phil?
Okay, well, the Native Americans believe you get lots of signs from all of nature. So animal spirits or totems are one. Plants are another. Stones are another. The actual stones talk to you. So a bald eagle usually gives you power, right?
Okay.
Power to either overcome something in your life or to give power to do exactly what you're going to do, but it also gives you keen vision. And keen vision can be looking at your dreams and putting them and manifesting them, but it also gives you what I call x-ray vision, and that is to be able to see through people. Okay. And it's like putting them on the spot. It's, you run across these people, it's how many excuses are you going to take this time?
Mm-hmm. So right? do you think that this eagle, I mean, just what do you feel that it was there? What kind of message was it giving me?
That one was for your power. The reason, and the railroad tracks have a little bit to do with it as well. And it's take a look at your vision and where you're going and give power to it.
Okay. That's what I'm doing today, talking to you guys. You guys are my vision, because this is what I love to do. And it's really been an honor to reconnect with both of you. And I truly mean that, Frank. You seem like a brother from another time.
Thanks, TJ. Likewise.
And you know what I was going to ask you, Phil, if you don't mind? And you, obviously, I feel a deep connection with you as well. We have to have done this before. Frank, are you comfortable with me asking this question?
Yeah, shoot.
When or
a lotto numbers, he's not going to give them to you.
But have we worked on, because you know I'd assume that we've worked to make things better at different times, not every lifetime, but generally I find that we work in groups with others, and we maybe have done it for eons, and I've been told that time and again. So I just feel this connection to both of you, and I'm thinking, was there another time that comes to you at all, Phil?
Okay, we are all, like you said, in those soul groups. I believe we were connected somewhere between the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, somewhere in there. I'm picking up, you know, actually the 1898 when they formed the Northwest Territories when Michigan was created.
Hmm.
And it was some of that pioneer spirit, and it was building. So we're trying to build. In that time, we were building a nation. This time, we're building a knowledge base. And that's why Frank, why you, and why I get together to expand people's knowledge.
So this is something that we planned to do before we even came here, right?
Yes.
We just don't remember it, Frank, do we?
No. Nope.
Which is probably good.
That's an interesting point, though. It really is. Now, like I said before, you have to, if you had seen Dr. Phil's face trancing out here, he's serious. He's getting into it. And sometimes it's a little spooky when he kind of turns around and he just stares at you for a few seconds. And I feel like Barbarino on Welcome Back, Kotter. What's that? You know, what, Dr. Phil? What do you see? Is it something? He's like, nothing to worry about.
Do you want to share at all, because I think it's really cool, about what you said Dr. Phil saw around you at, I don't know if it was a conference, but he saw some, remember, the beings around you?
Yeah, Phil might want to talk about that a little bit. He's the one who said it.
Okay, that was, again, at a, I guess, public session, and it was, what I saw around Frank were some alien beings, and they were large, about maybe 15 feet tall. And there were what I would call the benevolent beings, and it was all for almost their message to him was, the truth is going to be known, it's going to come out, and it's have a ride with us. And it's interesting that these beings can manifest. When I see spirit, it's usually in these public demonstrations, that the people who show up are bringing their spirit with them. And all they look like is little orbs, And then when an orb turns gold and goes over a person, that's when I get the messages, and then that orb turns into form, and that's what I see around the person. So it's, in this case, it's a connection with the universe that is very dear to Frank's heart, and it's his passion involved with it.
So these beings were in spirit beings that have passed away, or were they actually beings that showed up opening through a doorway?
Opening through a doorway.
And they are supporting him because they're well aware of what he's doing, and it's probably even an agreement, right, that took place even before he got here.
Yes, that is correct.
And it's kind of spooky too, TJ, when you're standing there and somebody's facing you and they look up over the top of your head and just kind of step back and their eyes open up. And once again, I'm like Barbarino, like, what? What? Turning around looking like I'm going to see something, except he's looking up about, you know, 10 to 15 feet up in the air over the top of my head.
And that doesn't surprise you at all when you see that, Phil? When you saw that, that's not something that freaked you out a little bit at all?
No, because in my looking at that, it's just spirit in some form or another.
Okay. And these beings are here to assist you, Frank, and it tells you that you're on the right path, so you got to feel pretty good about that.
I hope I'm on the right path. It's been about 25 years on this path, TJ.
Well, it's, you know, that's the thing, isn't it, Phil? We don't realize how much support we really have, do we?
No, we do not.
Invisible.
And we have support from the other side. We have support from this side. One of the most challenging parts of the support on this side is that we don't have the courage to just ask.
Mm. And that's what we need to do to move forward, you're saying?
Yes.
Is there any more you want to talk about, Frank, regarding your father? Or any spirits that went bump in the night?
Well, the one thing that was interesting, the first couple times that had happened where the caller ID showed up and the automated voice, you know, said my father's name and telephone number, it was the first couple times my mom actually had doctor's appointments, and it happened right before her appointments. And then the other one was on my parents' wedding anniversary. A coincidence? I don't know. Now, Phil's sitting there shaking his head, no. Yeah, and I just don't know.
You don't believe yet?
That you don't understand, but from what Phil told me, don't worry about it. And it's a form of energy that we can't see. It's like I talked to me about auras before and how aura colors change and the significance of that, too.
How many years have you been doing this, Dr. Phil?
I'm shocked. Like, what's that mean? He's like, oh, your aura's purple today. And then I'll have to go on and explain what that means, because I don't understand a lot of this stuff, TJ. Mm-hmm. But I guess a lot of it goes hand in hand.
How many years have you been doing this, Dr. Phil?
I have been doing it since I was a child.
Wow.
You know, on and off, and I had a career, and then I would say the last 12 years or so is where I've been serious about it.
And it's just something you knew you had to pursue, right?
Yes. It was one in those contracts.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move on to something that has gathered a fair amount of opinion, or I think a lot of curiosity, is a man wrote a book about called Missing 411, Missing 411. Supposedly doing research that there were a lot of people that disappeared in national parks, I'm sure in many places, but it seemed like the parks was where this happened a lot, and he felt the parks even were covering it up. And so I thought this would be an interesting topic and try to figure out what may be going on with that. Now, Frank, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, David Paulides, I believe is the way you pronounce his name. It's Paul, and then I-D-E-S.
So you're familiar with David?
Yeah, a little bit. Somebody had sent me an email link, one of the radio shows that I did last year. They sent out a mass email, and it had a link to this guy's site about all the people that are missing in North America and national parks and the outskirts of national parks. It's a pretty intriguing story. I had no idea what was going on with this. A lot of craziness and little kids with their pets disappearing, then later showing up several miles away on a mountaintop. Kids walking with their parents through a national forest 5 feet behind, and the parents will turn around and talk to the kid, and the kid's gone. I remember one particular story. A boy was missing for it was about a week, and the search party had went in and out of this particular section of the forest about 100 times over the course of a week, and one path in, one path out, TJ, and then one day they were walking back out, and there's the kid sitting there in the path. Mm-hmm. You tell me how that happened. So yeah, and a lot of these instances where the kids, and multiple kids are go missing as well, there will be torrential downpours during the periods of the search parties, and then the kids will just show up dry, no soil, no dirt, nothing on them. It's like they were somewheres and just were dropped out and put back into place. But this has been going on for years and years and years. It seems it's another big cover-up. And maybe we can get Dr. Phil to give a little insight of where these people are going. Some of them come back and some don't, TJ, from
right.
What I understand.
Yeah.
Maybe Phil can give us a little insight.
Yeah, this I think is a real interesting topic. So, Phil, what do you, if you don't mind?
Okay, I want to start with the children and how attuned they are. And when we are growing up to a certain age, typically 7, we're attuned to spirit, we're attuned more to nature. So we just have our imagination and our abilities enhanced, right? And some people call these children indigo children, rainbow children. I just call them gifted because I don't want to put any label on them. So I believe when we go into these wilderness areas, it all has to do with ley lines as well and that energy that is affecting it. Now, I mentioned the elementals before, but the elemental realm, it has a lot of influence on humanity and how it affects people. Typically, let me explain the elementals. We have what we call, they represent the four elements. So earth is represented by gnomes. Fire is represented by salamanders. Air is represented by sliths, which we would call clouds or UFOs in clouds. And water is represented by undines.
What are they called?
Undines. Okay. U-N-D-I-N-E, which I would call the joy of the dolphin family.
Okay.
Well, when we're looking at particular energies on the ley lines, then it's perhaps a dimension or multi-dimension opens, and perhaps a gnome will take this person into what we call hollow earth, and then do this exploration of amazement, and then more or less put them through another dimension or stargate, and leave them at the top of a mountain, per se. So the elementals have gone what you would call underground for the past decade or so due to the pollution. So we're not really attuned to the elementals as we should be, but these gifted children are attuned to that, and it is possibly some of these that at least come back have that experience of going into Hollow Earth, flying in the clouds, and seeing the salamanders and feeling that passion.
What about the ones that don't return?
That's a couple of, you know, possibilities there. One could be just total abduction and go to the reptilian factory. Otherwise, it could just be pure evil human beings.
So when you say reptilian and the evil, what did you call it? The evil factory?
Yes.
What is that?
Reptilians actually part of their life structure, form structure, is to be a cannibal of human.
Really?
Yes. And I think I referred to that about the Soylent Green type
right
energies before, but that is why we see children on missing milk cartons, etc., or on the bulletin board by Walmart.
These are just walking through the woods and the kid's like a foot or two behind, they turn and the kid's gone.
That is a dimension that opens up.
So the kids are like walking in right, and like walking to a curtain.
You know, there was, let me throw this at you, Phil, if you don't mind. There was a story, of course, TV, you never know because they turn things around so much. But there was a story about this kid that he survived an incident. He was camping with his parents and was in the Mount Shasta area because they were doing about these. There was actually Mysteries of the National Parks. It ties right into this. And I watched this program and I thought, wow, what are they doing showing this? This is really cool. And this child who was very young was walking on a trail not far from his parents. And he saw something that looked like his grandmother, and it called him into a cave, and he spent the night there. And this thing that looked like his grandmother wanted him to defecate on something, and they thought, well, maybe it was by giving up his DNA or something would affect things. Have you ever heard anything like that, and what would that be about? And the kid eventually got away. He realized it wasn't his grandma, and he got the heck out of there.
I have not heard anything like that, but I would what brings up my BS meter per frame. The spirit in a negative form can embody or visualize as any person. So I believe this is a negative entity that was some type of entrapment, and with the defecation, I would have to say that even though it's a little strange, does have that DNA possibility. Maybe they're doing research on nutrition or ways to improve it for them.
Oh, I see. So they can eat us, you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
Well, actually, as a matter fact of history, the Aborigines in Australia did not like the English people because they were too salty.
Jeez. Well, that's good then. They probably wouldn't eat you so much if you had a little. Maybe I need to put more salt in my diet because I spent a fair amount of time in the woods, so. You know, is there anything that we need to worry about when we go to these places? Should people be concerned? Should they be more careful?
I would say if you have children, then at least watch them and maybe put them in front of you. If there's also, we can do the spiritual protection and just put our bubble around us. A lot of people don't really activate that portion of their being that they have.
Frank, is there anything you want to add to this at all?
Yeah, well, one thing I don't understand is they'll be walking along and they turn around and the kid's gone. How come the parents who are 3, 4, 5 feet away don't get engulfed? You know what I mean? They're just a short distance apart. Does this thing travel, this time warp or window, and just engulf them? Or?
It's on the ley line, but also it has to do with your own energy field and how pure or impure that is.
So this could account for other missing people, not just people in national parks.
That's correct.
You know, since we're on the subject of missing people, and we were going to talk about, I'm sure, a couple more things, and we're probably getting close to the end here, but you and I, Frank, talked about Amelia Earhart, and we wanted to get your take on what happened to her, Phil.
I believe that she was flying through the clouds, and it's just one of those interdimensional type type vortexes that took her, and I believe that at that point she had known that whatever her contract was, she had accomplished. There was not really all that much more for her to accomplish.
There were reports, and Frank, you said this as well, of people communicating with her days after she passed. Is there any, didn't you say that, Frank, right, first of all?
Yeah, there were different ham radio operators who said that they had heard her, but I don't know if it was really her.
I have heard that story as well.
There's a lot of different stuff. One case that's always intrigued me, and I'm going to kind of pop this one on Dr. Phil as he's holding his head down here. Because he's turning bright red again. Here's another famous, this is probably the most famous ghost ship story, TJ, was the Mary Celeste ship.
Oh, yeah.
That disappeared in 1872. And the ship was originally named the Amazon in 1861. And it was the Mary Celeste seems to have had nothing but run-ins with trouble and bad luck over the years. And this ship in 1872, it was actually in November, was en route from New York to Genoa, Italy, and it was found in the Atlantic Ocean, abandoned. And there's been speculation about this case for years and years, and it seems that nobody's came to a definitive answer. The crew is gone. The lifeboat was gone, and I believe that one of the few things that was only missing was the sextant, and there seems to have been no confrontation or pirates that overtook the people, and to this day, it's just another story that people are trying to figure out. You familiar with the story?
I am a little bit, and I associate it with the stories of the Bermuda Triangle. It's for some reason that there is a vortex that opens up, and it is what we would call hollow earth, and it was just, they were sucked in or transported into that hollow earth.
The crew itself, because the crew were missing, the ship was found. They actually sailed the ship for hundreds of miles and brought it back to mainland, TJ. That's how seaworthy this craft was. When they found it, the crew was missing.
Do you know where they went missing, and where it was exactly, what part of the world?
It had sailed, here's another interesting part, too. It sailed for approximately 380 miles alone.
On its own?
Yeah, on its own. When they found it from the last point where there was an entry made into the blog of the captain. But you know, was discovered off the coast of Africa.
Okay.
The route had actually went a little bit south, and the last log position was the 25th of November. But there's something interesting, too, that's been documented, is the first mate's wife, actually, who was back in mainland U.S., she actually claims to have had a dream and a premonition that her husband was murdered. And what was odd is once the ship was taken back by the crew that found it, her husband on that exact date, on the 25th, was in the middle of writing a letter and abruptly ended in the middle of a word. And they found that. So we don't know if that was that premonition of the first mate's wife is actually true. But they never found any bodies, TJ. So this is probably the biggest ghost ship story in history.
Well, if I understand what Phil is saying about these doorways that lead to the inner earth or the hollow earth, and I know that Bermuda is one of them, at least I believe that's one of them, and there's this place. Is it actually the inner earth, or is it a dimensional place, or is it actually a place that exists inside the earth?
I believe it exists inside the earth.
Me too. And so there were these beings that one time, from what I understand of it, lived on top of the planet. And maybe when there was chaos, if it was Atlantis or whatever happened, they went inward and they found a passage. And there are passages at the poles, perhaps. Is there any truth in that? And so there's this inner place. And I also heard that when we are doing things we shouldn't be doing on top of the planet, they have these ships, and they will open a doorway to come take a look at us. Have you heard that as well, Phil?
Yes, and they call those USOs.
And so they will come out, and if we happen to be in that doorway, when they come through, we can be taken to their place, or we can maybe wind up at the bottom of the ocean.
I believe taken to their place.
And so once you go there, they don't let you return, but you're still alive. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I don't know if you've ever heard that, Frank. I'm sure you must have. There's a guy that lives down in Florida. You probably heard of him, that guy that flew through that. I've had him on my show a couple of times.
No.
And he actually survived what was this, he said it called a magnetic cloud that followed him when he was in Bermuda and he was flying back to Miami. And this magnetic cloud, Bruce Gernon, that's his name, and he tried to climb over it, and this followed the plane, and eventually he was enveloped by it. And he said at some point they were worried about getting out of it, and they saw this spiral, this opening, and it was closing. And he tried as quickly as he could to get out of that opening, because he felt if he wouldn't have, he would have been sucked into something. And he's the only person that I know of that's gone through that. And then what's amazing was he was several miles, like 90 miles outside of Miami at the time when this happened. And he literally traveled 80 miles in like seconds. And they said a scientist said for him to do that, he would have had been traveling 3,200 miles an hour. They broke it down. So it was like he felt like the plane was hydroplaning. And they felt something. And the next thing they know, they're almost right at the airport. And the tower saying, okay, you're going to land. And they're going, well, we're still 90 miles out. No, you're not. So was he experiencing, do you think Bruce was experiencing part of this doorway?
Yes, I do believe. Because a lot of those ley lines are either electromagnetic or magnetic fields.
So people should be aware, a little careful when they go over these places?
Yes, they should.
Now, what about where I live? If I go out on Lake Michigan kayaking, should I be careful, or Lake Superior?
No, not particularly, because the ley lines are just energy fields that are either positive or negative. The more positive they are, the wider they are. The more negative they are, the more they shrink. We have one going through Daytona Beach.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so, you know, it shrinks and expands. based on, you know, murders around or, you know, good will towards men, so with the homeless people and everything. So you'll be able to feel it.
We have an effect on all of it, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And this show that we're doing right now is just going to probably make the world a better place, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Is there anything more you want to talk about, Frank or Phil, that you want to add to this?
You got anything that you want to ask Dr. Phil for yourself, TJ?
For myself? You know what? When you said salamander, when you're talking about a salamander, I've lived out where I do in the country for 15 years now. The other day, this was like 2 weeks ago maybe, I like to sit on my deck, have a beer, grill out, and just enjoy, when I get home, just enjoy nature. And this salamander, it looked like, I've never seen one. He was crawling down my deck, and he was crawling right towards me. And I'm thinking, you know, normally they're in, aren't they in areas where there's more water or sandy areas? And it's all, you know, this is a grass area. Was that something that was trying to get my attention?
Yes, it was. And then the element fire then is all your power, your intuition, your creativity. So maybe he gave you an inspired thought.
He probably said, get a hold of Frank and Phil.
Maybe he just wanted a beer, TJ.
I would have offered him one. You know, the funny thing was, he was coming right at me, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go meet him halfway. And the minute I got up, boom, he took off. So it's like, okay, next time just let it be. Let him come to you. Well, it's been a joy talking to both of you guys, and I think I could do this. We could go a lot longer, and there's so many different things that we could probably go into. Is there anything else you want to add to this at all, or anything, Frank, that's on your mind right now?
It really seems we covered some good points today.
Great. And, you know, if you're like me, you're curious about everything. You strike me as that being that way, Frank. And Phil, are you curious about things as well?
Never stop believing.
Yeah. And you never stop searching?
That's correct.
Well, it's a great joy to talk to both you guys. Thank you very much for being a part of this.
Thank you, TJ.
Thanks, TJ.